Good afternoon, and welcome to this afternoon's NAESP Assistant Principals Webinar, Beyond Equity, the Lens Through Which We Lead. At this time, I would like to introduce NAESP's Associate Executive Director of Professional Learning, Dr. Gracie Branch.
Thank you, Danielle. It's great to be here this afternoon and introduce our esteemed panelists. It's like NAESP has their own version of the Three Musketeers. When they get together, you're just going to be in for a great time. They have a lot of similarities. You know, they're passionate about what they do. They've all been award-winning assistant principals for their state. But one thing I really appreciate about them is they can take research and they can put it into practice. They're going to give you that practical application, those tips that are going to be so helpful. Now, they do have some differences. They're from different parts of the United States. Dr. Andrea Thompson is from Prince George's County, Maryland. She's also a fellow in our Center for Women in Leadership. Andrew Lindsay is from the great state of Michigan. And congratulations are in order for Andrew. He's just been named a head principal, moving into lower elementary. So we know he'll have a lot of good stories to share. And then last but not least, we have Aquetta Jones. Aquetta's from the wonderful state of Delaware. And Aquetta's also the moderator of our AP Rising listserv and is even doing coffee chats. So if you haven't joined the AP Rising listserv, you need to get with Aquetta. So I'm going to turn it over to our great panelists today. Thank you for being here.
Okay, thank you so much, Gracie. Everyone, we're going to set the context for our topic because we said beyond equity. And I'm quite sure that many are wondering, what does that mean? So here it is when we look in the inequality quadrant. Look at how that tree is shaped. That tree represents the classroom, the school building, or the school district. The apples on the tree represent the opportunities. And remember, it's all about granting access to these opportunities. So look at how that structure is bent, leaning to give one group more access to the opportunities than the other. And then we said, okay, let's now go into equality. Let's give everyone the same thing, everyone the same tools. Now, because the structure that you have in place in your classroom, in the building, in the school district has not changed, giving both the same tools does not work because the structure is still leaning towards granting one group more access to opportunities than the other. And then you say we need to really delve into equity. So let us look at what it is that each group needs. Now, the problem with that is that one group now becomes resentful that the other group is getting more than what the other group has. And it creates issues. And even when you look at the tree, more opportunities are still leaning towards one group than the other. We've got to get beyond equity. Getting beyond equity means that we adjust that structure. We adjust systems. Look at the tree. You see where they have straightened it up. And now we have equal access to opportunities, equal tools have been given to everybody gets the same tool and everybody has the same opportunities for success. Everybody has access. So it's beyond equity into justice. And now Aquetta and Andrew.
So we explored a little bit of what beyond equity looks like in our pre-chat or our pre-webinar chat. But now we'd like you to reflect and respond to the image that you just saw that Dr. Thompson, that Andrea, that she explained. And what's your response to that? How did that impact you? What are your thoughts about the inequality, equality, equity, and justice image that we just saw. Type a couple sentences in the chat box, please.
Don't all be shy.
No right or wrong answers.
Honoring diversity and social justice.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Into systems to fix the tree. Yes. Mm-hmm. Changing the structures to provide for all students. Yes. Thank you. The illustration makes things clear. Yes.
I like it is the responsibility of all the leaders to ensure that is respected because it is the right of every child. That when you start talking about rights and responsibilities, those are powerful words. Thank you.
Yes. And I see the visual learner is appreciative of the picture.
Mm-hmm. I like this. I think about the roots we have to dig deep to strengthen the tree. You know, in my deep self.
Mm-hmm. We have to dig deep to strengthen the tree. Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
During COVID times, I hear a lot about equity surrounding in-person versus remote learners. How do those students who are not physically in the building get an equitable education?
Good question. Good question. Mm-hmm.
And I know you're going to touch on that, Equita. And energy and resources. Yes, Felicia, that's talking about MTSS. The multi-tiered system and structures.
Dr. is right on. No one should have to fight for resources. They should just be.
Yes.
They should yes. Free.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is wonderful. Okay. So let's move on to, so here it is. How is equity used in decision making? Now each of us will address one bullet. How is equity used in decision making? The first thing we have to think about is what is it that we're making decisions about? All our decisions align to the PFL standards. So we're making decisions around our mission and vision and ethics. We're making decisions around equitable practices, community of care, meaningful engagement. And number four, curriculum and instruction. We've got to make decisions around those. How is equity used in decision making? What I do, I like to use an equity lens as I look at the systems and the structures that I must put in place for each PFL standard. Mid-Atlantic Equity Consortium, they have an equity audit, which there it is posted in the chat. The Mid-Atlantic Equity Consortium is excellent for you to use as a leader to determine if your systems and structures in the classroom and in the school building are equitable, if everyone is getting access. So as you look at your policies, I like to call it the three Ps, the people, process, product, the policies, procedures, and practices. As you look at your school's policies, procedures, and practices relevant to each PFL standard, you need to go in with an equity lens. And just one quick example, the mission. Look at your mission statement. Does it address all stakeholders, all students, all teachers, all everybody? Go in with an equity lens. And Andrew?
So one of the things that we want to talk about are when we look at equity is whether or not our priorities align to what our data tells us. And I, in particular, because it's the most bold way we can reflect equity in our schools is whether or not our budget priorities match what the data tells us about equity. And all of this is intertwined. So we'll touch upon a little bit more of this later as well. But for instance, a lot of times when a school may have some behavior issues, they want to align their budget priorities to deal with the behavior issue. And then the data then tells us, well, a certain subset of the school population may be more responsible for specific behavior issues. So that's superficial data. In the budget, then priorities shift toward what can we do about that situation when we don't look at the structural issue of whether or not there is the curriculum is in place to engage all students adequately, whether or not the systems of support around the school, not necessarily within the school, but around the school, are in place to provide the support necessary to help students succeed in school. And so we have to be bold. We have to really take a look at where our priorities lie if we're going to make decisions that become equitable decisions or even move beyond equitable decisions to justice decisions. If we're going to bend that tree and get it straightened back up, we have to have the courage to look at our own practices in a very, very blunt and very nuts and bolts sort of way. The idea that we've always done certain things a certain way, or the idea that historically our district or our school has always done certain things cannot be the be-all, end-all for the why we make those decisions, because if they are not impacting all students in the same way, or even in a way that gives the same access, then we have to be courageous enough to make those changes. And that means sometimes stepping on, stepping on some toes that need to be stepped on because people are just so ingrained in certain ways of leadership and certain ways of making decisions. So one of the things that I encourage you to do is to look at your data, but then just go beyond the superficial data and don't just try to put a Band-Aid on what the data tells you, but to dig real deep and find out what the data, how the data is formed. Because when you find out how the data is formed, you get a better idea of what needs to be done to improve the system as a whole. Quetta?
All righty. It's my turn. So I am really big on engagement. We want those families there. So when I'm talking about equity and family engagement, I'm talking about focusing on meaningful engagement activities and systems between schools and families that do not characterize or treat specific parent groups as inadequate. I think so many times we create things and we focus on, you know, a generalized group, and we want to support these minorities, or we want to support the immigrants, or we want to support the refugee families. We're not flexible in our engagement options, and there's no coordination between the families and schools. So when we're talking about equity, we want to make sure that we truly, truly make sure our peeps feel like they are welcomed at all times and that they need to be there. It's one word I'm keeping out because we're going to get into that in the next slide. But for me, I feel like, you know, thinking about us as leaders, right? We're APs, we're the heartbeat, we're that pulse, we're getting it going. Our families want to have a relationship with someone. That's equity. That's equity. Making sure that everybody has a voice. We all have voices. We have people we can go to. We have APs and principals and girlfriends and boyfriends and whoever else we need to chat and chill with. Our parents and our families need to know that there's a staff member that is approachable, that will be friendly, that will be receptive to their concerns. And my big thing is a champion, not only for them, but also for their students. They need to know that when I'm not around, Miss Jones has my baby's back. Then I don't have to come in there like the mama bear and go, and then get everybody shooken up. I know that there is a voice for them. And also perceptions that families are welcome and valued. Perceptions are their reality, not our reality. So the way that our families view us could cause an inequitable situation. So we really want to make sure that they're, that piece, I love you. I may not like you today, but I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I've got your back. I'm going to be here. They need to know that. And then the other thing is, remember, responsiveness, being responsive. And if you can't do it at the right time, at the right moment, give yourself a breather, reflect on it, take a deep breath, go take a walk. Andy knows I really don't like the snow. You need to go put snow on your face. Then come back and offer some transparency. Give them a little empathy. Show them that you're flexible and that your staff is flexible when you're talking about communication, collaborative effort. Anything that you need to do to make them feel supported, you want to embrace it. You want to push through because our families need to be engaged. Everything that we think is happening at home may not necessarily be the truth for them.
All right. So one of the questions that is in the chat says, do you think teachers will need special training and awareness development to make it a conscious effort on their part? That is a decision that has to be made. So what are our thoughts about the special training, the in the area of specifically awareness and with regard to our staff?
So I feel like one thing is it's very hard to train compassion. It's very hard to train empathy, you know, so that would come from modeling, you know, even if we find as leaders, we're not that person. We all know when out of this dynamic trio, Jones is always going to be the hyper one. Equality is going to be like, and I want all this fancy stuff, but there's a balance in the team. So what maybe one teacher's strength may not be another. So it takes us as the leadership development team, as I call us, as APs and principals, to support those teachers through what it looks like to be aware and model, you know, and that's their training. They need to see it being done and being done well. I think sometimes we, there's a PD for this, there's a PD for that. Well, I don't know how many of you out there have become parents. No matter how much training you have before that child comes, you can never plan for everything that is going to come. So it's just, we do this together. We support each other. And when we see someone that's not doing something that may be effective, we coach them through it. Because we can't change people's personalities just like people can't change who we are. That's why we're all unique. No other person on this earth is named DeQuetta Jones that was born on December 15, 1977. Thank God for the universe. However, to change me would be very difficult, but there are certain things that are my weaknesses or growth opportunities that I have to use my colleagues to grow me through. So if you can't have a conversation appropriately, utilize a team member to help you with that.
Andrea, what are your thoughts about making special training and awareness development for teachers?
I think it is very important because, say, for example, you're in a school with a high English language learning population. The teachers believe that because they do not know the parents' language, they cannot really engage with them. You've got to show them the tools that are available that they can use to actually connect. So there's a lot of training. They have got to become culturally aware. They have to become culturally proficient and not view them as these strange creatures that dropped off their babies. So you've got to really look at your demographics. You need to understand the languages, the different languages that are spoken in your school building so that you can equitably address all parents. Some are from Nigeria. Some are from certain places that speak Kishi, some speak Mam, some speak Spanish. Do not believe that everyone that may identify as Hispanic speaks Spanish. Understand those who are coming from Guatemala, those who are coming from all these indigenous places and so on. Have your staff become aware of the demographics, of the needs of different parents, And we've got to go beyond baking cookies. We have to understand that even though we have the cultural things and they dance and they sing and they share their culture, that we also need to build their capacity to help their children at home.
So one of the things that's interesting is being from Michigan, we have ethnically, I think, less diverse than like the Washington, D.C. area, where you have literally people from around the world.
Everywhere.
But so much of what you're saying is true here as well, because one of the things that Aquetta said earlier is people's perceptions are their reality. Yes. So in Michigan, where we might not have different cultural, I mean, we have them, don't get me wrong. For instance, Dearborn is one of the biggest centers for Middle Eastern population outside of the Middle East. So, I mean, we have our cultural populations, but we don't have so diverse as the D.C. area. But we do have socioeconomic diversity, and how a college educated person and a non-college educated person talk to each other can cause some of those same cultural differences and cause inequitable access to the schools for our parents. And it is incumbent upon us as educational leaders to be aware of that so that all families feel comfortable walking in that front door in a non-COVID year and can come into the building and feel that warmth that we want them to have. And for staff sometimes that have a difficult time with giving that sense of warmth, one thing Brenda said in the chat is true. Sometimes it takes having a courageous conversation.
Yes.
I was going to say that the courageous conversation is important. And I don't want anyone to think that I'm not saying that people shouldn't be aware. Sure. But awareness training on implicit biases is very important. Like I agree with that. But I'm saying when sometimes you can't just go to someone and say, you doing this. Sometimes you just have to show them. So, you know, one of the things that we've done here at Highlands is all of our staff participated in an implicit bias training to let us be able to identify our own biases, because everyone has biases that, you know, whether they want to admit it or not. So the thing is as we get ready to move on, just remembering that you have to know your staff. So in order for us to be able to even have a conversation about implicit biases, we had to build a courageous space. One that people would be willing to share their stories and their thoughts, their hurts, their joys, whatever it was. You can't just go and say, we're going to talk about implicit biases and people not feel comfortable to express what they feel. Mm-hmm. All right. So we're going to move on to our next slide because we can talk all day. So our next question is, what does it mean for leaders to champion equity? So for me, I am really, really, really big on voice. And hearing what every individual in my building has to say. Because ultimately, like we're learning, you know, we have learned really quickly that we don't have playbooks. So right now, I mean, well, if you do, you let me know if you have a playbook that can stand with our developing pandemic that is just like the bomb. Because if you do, it is the America's bestseller. But right now, for me, I will say I don't have a playbook to contend with this pandemic. So everything is unpredictable. Every day there's something different. But the one thing that I think is important is to lift up those under-engaged voices. Who is the staff that you don't hear from? Who are the community members you don't hear from? Who are the students you don't hear from? And listen to what they have to say. Listen to their voice, because they are the ones that are seldom heard. We often go right to the person that's always yelling, the mom that's coming, the dad that's coming, the papa, the uncle, the teacher, whoever it is. But those silent voices, especially in those minority groups, and they have some cultural background differences or maybe having lower grades, be a lower socioeconomic status, be very quiet around their peers, or the ones that may have something that could really change the atmosphere in our building. And then also, give them time to discuss things with you and explore things with you, and even push your teachers to do the same thing in their classroom. it's nothing wrong about listening and getting your opinions from the scholars that you're serving in your building. Nothing wrong with getting those things from your parents or from the teachers. That will help you as a leader to get a deeper understanding of the needs of the people that you're serving. And by all means, everybody that knows me, I love creativity. So let's be creative. Allow all of your stakeholders to be creative in the way that they express themselves to you. Sometimes they can't verbalize through words, but they can do songs, they can dance, they can write a picture, they can come and paint the school. It doesn't make a difference. We just want to make it equitable. And then also giving every stakeholder the time to write down the voice of others. So one thing I encourage my staff and my peeps, I call them peeps, parents empowering each other on a personal level, is literally listen to what other people are saying and journal down their thoughts. So we so often journal our own thoughts and we focus on how we feel, but taking the time to journal down and encourage our peers to take on the voice of someone else, that helps us to develop empathy and to be open to others' perspectives, which also helps with our bias. So, you know, make everything personally relevant. Don't just make it about you. You know, the three of us are all together. We're very different. But whenever we present, we make sure that all of our voices are heard so that we can make sure that everyone feels empowered, encouraged, and engaged. So I will keep talking, but I'm going to kick it off to my buddy, Andrea, so she can focus on some equitable access.
Okay. So Ekranda just talked about hearing everybody's, all stakeholders' voices. It goes back. I'm very big on PLC. I cannot lead a school unless it's a PLC. It has got to be collaborative. And when you put in a strong PLC culture, and you put systems and structures in place so that everyone has an opportunity to be heard, that means a lot. So it goes right back to the structures and systems that you put in place, especially when it comes to building their capacity. So equitable access for all students, every student, every classroom, all have the same access to opportunities, just like we saw in the picture. All students must have access to excellent teachers. So it's incumbent upon us as our leaders to make sure that all our children, everyone, have access to excellent teachers and excellent resources. So it means that we really need to take an equity lens as we look at the programs in the school. Equitable outcomes will only happen if we have equitable access. And this comes through that multi-tiered system, that multi-tiered structure. Does your school have an MTSS team? Does your school have an equity team? As you do progress monitoring and you do that continuous improvement, you need to determine what is going on. Do all children have access? Are we looking at every child's data? Not just academics, but also behavior and attendance. When we look, because they all correlate for all children. If you're not doing that deep dive, especially in an inclusive environment, then you're not providing equitable access for all students. So it has got to be an inclusive environment with a strong MTSS team that's looking at all students. So we have equitable outcome with excellent teachers, excellent resources that Andrew talked about when he said that you use the, when he talked about the budget. You make sure that even the resources for teachers to use and for our children to get is equitably dispersed. And it goes back to what Ekranda is talking about, being very equitable in the family engagement and community. Make sure that all parents regardless of culture, class, whatever structure, are being listened to. So it's just equity all running through the system. And Andrew?
So one of the other things is it takes a little bit of self-reflection. I'm going to tell a very quick story of a situation that happened to me earlier this school year. I was working with a young lady who gave a larger sum of money, received a larger sum of money than normal, than you'd normally have with a fifth grader from a peer. And, you know, in schools, we find out about it. We want to make sure that that everything's on the up and up, and just we were a little bit concerned. And it was because one student, a boy, had done something to a girl's computer program. This is in a program called Roblox. Some of you may be familiar with it. And I just was like, okay, it's not passing the smell test. So I called the boy's parents and I asked, are you aware that your son came in with this amount of money today and was giving it to a young lady? And she said, yes, we are, because he was building something for her online in this online program, and he messed it up and he cost her some resources that she had paid real money for. Now, please understand, I'm techie, but I'm still can't believe this is at the fifth grade. So then I called the young lady's mom, because I just wanted to make her aware that her daughter was coming home with a little bit of extra money, and that I'd already spoken to the other family about it, and that they were aware, and her mom was aware as well. And I learned a little bit about the young lady, because the mom said, yeah, she's into coding, and this is something that she takes very seriously. And if you judge a book by its cover, I would have never in a million years saw that child as being someone who is into coding. I am 24 years into my public education career, and I still have to fight implicit bias and making assumptions about kids. And I bring that up is because it is so critical that we reflect on ourselves and the assumptions we make about kids, the assumptions we make about genders, the assumptions we make about races, the assumptions that we make about which families bring more money in to their households, which families don't, assumptions that we make about NWEA scores. We have to, at all times when we're making assumptions, be willing and open to challenging those assumptions so that we don't fall into the pit of despair of implicit bias, as I did with this young lady. Now, one of the things that I did, because that was at my last school and I left that school in January, is I let the teachers know, because this was literally 2 days before I was leaving that school. I let the teachers know, do you know that this young lady is into coding? Because all of a sudden now there are new avenues to connecting with this young lady who struggles academically to be engaged. Now we have a new conversation to have with the young lady in an area that she finds fascinating, that engages her, so that we can, when it comes to math in particular or science, that we can connect with this child and play on what she's already interested in to build those academic skills and make it connect to something she believes in. It's when we challenge our assumptions, our own assumptions, or even assumptions of those around us, but it starts with us, let's face it. When we have the courage to challenge those assumptions and the humility to realize that we were wrong. And it's okay, by the way, to be wrong. And it's okay to understand that implicit bias happens to you too. It doesn't make you an evil human being. Racism is evil. Implicit bias is something every person is challenged by. And the only way to get beyond that is to have the courage to challenge those assumptions. So I would encourage you in your own practice and in your own worlds to look at those assumptions that you make and be willing to push back on yourself. And this is where it comes in, as an educational leader, it becomes also important to work as a staff to build that sense of trust and that sense of appreciation in each other to where we can challenge the assumption of another person on our staff without it becoming a personal attack. That's what's so difficult to do with a staff of diverse adults is when we push back on someone's assumptions, we push against their implicit biases, it's really difficult to not take that personally, to not take it like, who, what do you mean? What are you really saying to me? I'm not saying anything. I'm guilty of it too. You know, be humble, but at the same time, be bold enough to make it known that this may not be the assumption that you want to make right now. And so, I want you to know that's, it's difficult to do. But one thing I've learned over time is that when you come and you challenge someone politely, respectfully, and honestly from a place of integrity, that actually promotes trust in the long run. You're scared to death it's going to ruin it in the short term, but in the long run, it builds it because it's safe to be wrong. It's safe to fall short. And you know that you have other people there to help build you up. And as a leader, isn't that what we want among our staffs? Isn't that what we want among our teachers, our paras, our secretaries, our janitors, that they feel safe at school? We talk a lot about kids feeling safe at school. We want to make sure adults are feeling safe at school. And sometimes it takes challenging an assumption in the right way to promote that sense of intimacy.
And Angie, you know, I want to talk about that and just how trusting and brave our staff is. I have big hair, and I have different ways of wearing my hair. I don't often want to deal with it, but I will say one of my staff members was like, "Oh my gosh, Ms. Jones, I love when your hair is like that." And she's like, "Is it real?" So the thing was, you know, what she had been taught was someone who constantly changes their hair may not necessarily have real hair. And I said to her, I'm like, well, yeah. And then she used the word nappy. So we had to have a conversation about that because she heard some of our scholars use the word nappy. I said, I have really tight curls. You can touch it if you want. It is mine. But it wasn't one of those things where I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you said that. You called you it. No. She did not mean any harm or ill will. She was using the vocabulary and the terms that she had been used to. And she knew that we had a trusting relationship where she could come to me and ask me questions about my hair. They know I don't play about my hair. But for me, it was, if there was someone else that didn't have that perspective, they would have probably went off on her, which would have never taught her the lesson of, no, just because my hair is big and it's like this, it doesn't mean that it's a weave. But also, it doesn't mean that because the curls are so tight that you can't put your fingers right through it, because you can. You know, so, and then it also helped her when she had a student in the class who came in crying because her mom had her hair out and it was natural, falling. And she said, you know what? We're going to go talk to Miss Jones. And we talked, and I said to her, I said, you are beautiful, you are bold, and you are bright, and be happy for who you are. And actually, you're the reason why Ms. Jones started wearing her hair out in natural, because I looked and reminded myself of just how beautiful it was. And you know what? Now she walks through, and the teacher's learning about the hair, and she's helping her make her hair look more vibrant and beautiful and healthy. And because of that hair statement and the teacher bringing her to me and having that conversation, they have now built a relationship. So, you know, it's we all say things and we make assumptions because we don't know. But the only way to learn is to be able to have a brave and a safe conversation.
Yeah, got to have a place of safety. Yeah. You know, Aquetta, I do that too. I part my hair sometimes on this side and then I part it on the others, and the kids are like, oh, it's so wild. No, I'm joking. The last slide, please, where we talk about equity, ensuring equity among students. We're going to kick this one off by this quote by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And this one just has always powerfully resonated with me, that injustice anywhere, I'm going to repeat that, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So when we look at equity among our students, we need to know, we need to go deeper than just understanding the systematic structures of it. We got to understand the impact of it. If we are doing a behavior program because our African American males have a higher degree of discipline referrals than the rest of our student population, and we do a program that just exclusively reaches or is targeted at African American males, it may help produce better discipline statistics. But I also warn you, and I want to bring to your attention, the underlying message that sometimes that brings to the table, that that particular subset of student population, they need a special program because of whatever implicit bias or racist assumptions that are there. We have to be very aware of what we are telling students by our decisions and what we are saying with the impacts of those decisions. Because when we attack certain areas, what are we saying to the students that aren't in those areas? What are we saying to the rest of the student population about our African American boys if we do a peer mentoring program that exclusively involves African American boys? Now, don't get me wrong, I'm for peer mentoring programs. I just want to make sure that as we have that discussion, that we have the courage to say that depending on how it's implemented, we might be saying something completely different to the rest of our students than we are saying to the group that we're trying to support. And that message that the rest of the students are getting may not be what we want to be sending to them. And so when we say that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, we may be saying, yeah, that this is an area that we need to support, we need to address. But in doing so, we're also creating a different scenario with the rest of the students. So be very mindful when you're making your decisions about the message that it sends to all of our kids, to all of our staff, to our school community, because there are people out there who are looking for confirmation of their own biases. And we don't want our best efforts and our wonderfully good intentions to also confirm a bias that someone else has that we would not welcome. All right, Quetta?
Okie dokie. So, talking about respecting students and how they identify with themselves, really quickly, you know, we always talk before we meet, and I was just talking to my team about one of our students and how they identify. And, you know, we as leaders, we have to be very careful with how we respect the way our children view themselves, especially for me being in a K-5 school. We have a family who's very supportive of their child's identification, but it may be hard for other people who are in the environment to be accepting of that child. When the child's family came to us and said, we are no longer identifying this child as a female, we will refer to him as him, we joined. Did other people have their own perceptions that we had to educate them? Yes. Did we expect them to respect the student and keep it in private? Yes. Because we all have differences. And so the one thing that I love about our building is our kids are so resilient and so loyal and so loving that as soon as the change happened, they jump right to it, you know, because they want each other to feel loved and they want to know if you want to call yourself her or him or she, you know, I'm going to jump right to it. I'm not going to tease you. I'm not going to make you feel badly. I'm not going to question you. I may go to an adult so that I have understanding, but everyone is free to be who they are and we respect that. You know, it's no different than who we choose to be with as adults. You know, you may choose to be married. You may choose to be single. You may choose to cohabitate. It's no one's right to judge your choices. So we want to teach our children from a very early age that we respect everyone, no matter what they look like, where they live, who they associate with, but also respecting the thoughts and the perceptions of the parent. So it goes back to that equality, treating every student the same, but then making sure that we are making every student providing resources so that every student can receive the support they need to be successful. So if you need a group to be able to talk to and we don't have it in our building, we need to go out and find it. Or if we have someone that can relate to that child and the parent is okay with us doing that, we push that and we do what we need to do to provide that personalized learning and that personalized experience. And I'm going to let my partner go because I know we'll run out of time.
Okay, so as we think about going beyond equity, making sure that all students have the same access to opportunities, being given the very same tool. Remember, the ladder, the same height, but the system and the structure were fixed so that the students would have equitable chances. Okay, so confronting institutional biases and marginalizations that our students face. Our students face a lot of this within the school building. It is incumbent upon us to determine what institutional biases are running through this building. There are teachers with very low expectation of students. I've heard teachers say, my Asian students don't need as much help. So I'm focusing on these over here. I've heard teachers say, well, you know, his parents don't really have time to work with him anyway. So yeah, very dismissive. They judge them, and especially Andrew mentioned the NAEP. When you look at that and you disaggregate the data and you look at demographics and immediately the implicit biases that come upon us. I believe that we as leaders should have the implicit bias conversation in the classroom, because the children also have implicit biases about who the ones who are sitting next to them are and so on. So as we, the admin team, discuss implicit biases as we plan for our teachers, plan for our students, plan for our parents, then it needs to trickle down now. Let the teachers have the implicit biases that they have towards each other and towards other students. Let them confront that. And the same thing must happen for all staff members, even in the front office, who answer one set of parents much more cheerfully than they answer the others. See? So inequity runs all through the system. But I remember, as we're talking about assumption, that I remember one teacher came in one morning very angry about Black Lives Matter. And I had to use the strategy, the metacognition. That is the strategy you use to get inclusive conversations going. Inclusive conversations begin with you. She was very angry. And I said to her, I asked her, I said, ask yourself, why it is that you're so angry that someone is saying, my life matters. I said, because if I'm saying my life matters, why are you so upset? Are you feeling some kind of guilt? Do you feel as though your behavior has contributed to me not feeling as though my life matters? So implicit biases are addressed when we have the metacognitive kind of conversation. And then she came back in the evening and she said, I thought about this all day. Why am I so angry? Why am I angry? She said, I don't even know. She said, but I'm going to think about it some more. Why am I angry that people are saying my life matters? So that is one way to address institutional biases. Have your staff to do metacognition as they call out how they're thinking and let them think back as to why am I thinking this way? Why am I feeling this way? That this allows them to go deeper.
Andrea, okay. One of the things that kind of goes with that is as a leader, we have to model that.
Yes.
And so one of the things, and thank you, Brenda, for your very kind comment about being vulnerable. We have to, as leaders, have to be courageous enough to be vulnerable and to show that we're all learning. You know, the old phrase, lifelong learners, is truly true. You know, we never stop learning, and we have to be brave enough to lead the way so that others can follow and feel safe doing it. So when you have those metacognitive conversations, it's important that it starts with us as building leaders. And one thing about being an AP, and I was an AP for 8 years, so I only stopped becoming an AP a month ago, and so I still feel it. You are truly the heartbeat of the school in many ways. It was me that was in the cafeteria. It was me out on the playground. It was me walking the halls. You get a sense for what's going on in the classroom. And so it's perfectly okay for that type of leadership to start from you. So should we open up, see if there's any questions out there?
Why, certainly.
If you have any questions or you have any comments that you'd like to make, now's a great time to make them in the chat. We appreciate that you guys have been with us through this whole conversation. And there are things that we may not have thought about that maybe triggered a response in you. And we'd love to find out what that is in the chat box right now. So if you have a thought or if you have a perspective that we haven't touched upon or you think would enhance our discussion, would love to get that from you. Feel free to type it in right now. Just as a reminder, this webinar is being recorded and it'll be available for any ESP members online. Any other questions?
Don't be shy. It can be comments as well. Of using metacognition in conversations with emotionally charged adults.
Yes.
So after this webinar, I have to make a phone call to a parent who's upset that her she has to complete a health screening. We do a health screen every day. And she's like, this is just another case of government, blah, 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 blah. So I know she's charged. Yeah. But I still have to call. I still have to have that conversation. And so what is it that's going on that's causing frustration? And so that we can have that conversation. And I'm hoping that even though it may feel like adversarial at the start, by being brave enough to start that conversation in a non-accusatory manner, that's often the best way to hook that parent and get them on your side.
Yep. Metacognition. Why are you feeling this way?
Oh boy, our time is running out. Our Madam Chair, Gracie Grant, is ready.
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to jump into the conversation just a minute and just make sure that people knew that tonight, at 7 o'clock Eastern time, 6 Central. We are going to be on having a Twitter chat hosted by Dr. Ryan Daniel, who's a fellow in our Center for Diversity Leadership. And that's kind of going to be one of the topics I think that's discussed, is how to have some of these hard conversations that need to be had about diversity. So just wanted to make sure our participants out there, let them know that we weren't finished today. We've got our National Leaders Conference, some speakers later on this afternoon, and then a Twitter chat tonight. But I do want to thank you all. I think it was Aquetta that mentioned the phrase that made me think of all of you, that you're beautiful, bold, and bright. And you really have helped us shine that lens that we need to on equity, which I really, really appreciate. I know that will be an ongoing conversation for us at NAESP and providing our members the resources that they need to be a place of safety and to have those kind of bold and safe conversations. So thank you for everything that you shared today, and glad that everybody was with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.